Red Film Radio, Festival de Cannes.
Red Film Radio, this is Nicola Comotti here at Cannes 67, and today we actually attended the press conference with David Cronenberg and his last film, Maps to the Stars, complete with a full cast. So let's hear first how important it is for a director to have a great cast.
I would say 72.5%.
Okay.
Not 90%.
Okay.
But it certainly makes it a lot easier when you have wonderful actors who really know what they're doing. It makes directing really pretty simple, I must say. And so a lot of the directing is in casting the movie. There's no question about that.
Mr. Cronenberg also continued and expanded how it was to have a female role again in one of his films. Told us how humor is always everywhere in David's films. But first of all, he's going to give us a little hint about a specific award used in the film.
Okay, let's begin with the genie. That was my genie for Spider that we used in the movie. And Mia actually bent it when she was killing Julie. And it's still, we've tried to fix it, but it's still a little bent. So, you know, the personal touch is there. I'll jump to the last part first. Actually, I had a female lead in Existence, played by Jennifer Jason Leigh, and a female lead in an early film, Rabbit, played by Marilyn Chambers. So this is not the first time I've ever had a female lead, I must say. And in terms of the comedy, the humor, and so on, I think all my movies are funny. And I think this one is no exception. People have said to me, you really should make a comedy. And I said, but I've made nothing else, you know. So let's hope it's the La Divina Commedia. This could be the Divine Comedy. It didn't feel different. I mean, every movie is, of course, different. And Bruce's script, with Bruce's script, there's a voice that is unique. It's his. And I was really serving the script and his vision of LA and humanity in general. So, you know, blame him. I mean, it's not my fault. That's my attitude. But no, really, functionally, it was not different. It's playing all the tones, you know, playing all the notes, playing all the levels, and they vary from scene to scene, actually, and moment to moment. But, I mean, you got to admit there's some laughs in the movie. I mean, yeah. Come on. She thought she was making a comedy.
Yeah. Life is funny. I mean, we find humor in absolutely everything. In our desires, our desperation, our, you know, these are all people, particularly Havana, who was so desperate to be seen and heard and acknowledged and was working very hard on the externalization of that, you know, rather than internalizing anything. So you see, so there is something funny and sad, of course, about people consistently missing the mark. And you know, that's what this whole movie is about you know, looking to the stars or looking out rather than looking within. And Havana, in particular, is extremely adolescent, and as we all know, that's very funny.
I mean, it's really as a card-carrying existentialist, I have to say that these people are desperate to exist. They're desperate to assert their existence, and for Havana, she's terrified that she will cease to exist because, as an actress who's being discarded by the industry, she's terrified that she will, in essence, cease to exist. It'll be a living death, you know. And that's where the desperation comes from, and the cruelty and the viciousness too, because it's a matter of existence or non-existence.
The director and the writer of the film as well would go on to explain why there's a recurring poem called "The Liberty" in the actual screenplay.
But you should ask that to Bruce, because really, it was in his script from the beginning, and also when he sent me his first novel, Force Majeure, a French title, he had a stanza from that very same poem in French in the frontispiece of that novel. So obviously the poem has meant something to Bruce. I have no idea why, but why don't you ask him, and you'll find out.
I'm asking you, Bruce. the dreaded moment where the writer speaks. That the poem was always quite beautiful to me and resonant, and there was a melancholy to it. And I had broken up with a woman, and like any good writer, when the paperback of my latest book came out, I put the poem at the front of the paperback and dedicated it to her to try to win her back. So it has a different feeling for me than I think it does, of course, for the French. But it was always in the script, and what David did is he enhanced it, and we used it. David used it more in the script than it had originally been, which I was so pleased with. It was one of the surprises out of many that working with David. David is a wonderful writer. He has a novel coming out soon, and he, in that sense, it was, although the script, of course, existed and David helped to sculpt it, it was very much a collaborative thing. It was almost as if we got in the fly machine and our DNA kind of commingled. So I was very pleased that David brought out and enhanced the original impression that I wanted to make by including that poem in the script.
Yeah, I could add to that. Obviously, the poem is most known in the context of the resistance and the war, but because it's a real poem and not propaganda, it is organic. It has life. It has a life that continues and that allows it to be reinterpreted in different contexts and still have meaning. And I find it, without even thinking of its origins, that it is really very emotionally powerful and very provocative and evocative of many, many things. And it's interesting, when I started to look back at the history of the poem, that Éluard himself was writing that poem for a woman, not for Liberté, to begin with. And it transmuted for him into what it became. Oh. So in a way, Bruce kind of just rediscovered the origins of the poem.
Didn't know that.
And finally, we understand if Cronenberg really despises the film industry, or maybe he finds it less repulsive than it seems.
Which aspects of the movie?
Repulsive.
There's nothing repulsive in the movie business. I mean, it's all fabulous. Look at us. We're having so much fun.
Yeah, I have to say, though, I mean, I love the movie business. I mean, you know, I'm not here to disparage it. I think that you know, what the reason we value film, we value literature, we value narrative, because they tell us stories about our lives, who we are. And what Bruce just said about the Buddhist text about, you know, being afraid of that, and I thought it's so fascinating, this movie, to me, because it is all about this externalization, this desire to be seen. And in reality, in the most philosophical way, you can only be seen, truly be seen, in an intimate relationship with another person, which is the most difficult thing to attain. So you have this wonderful script that Bruce has written, which juxtaposes externalization with family. So I feel like that's, you know, that's our eternal struggle. And the fact that we get to explore that idea in Hollywood, in an entertainment, I think is really, truly marvelous.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is that the movie, and I'm not being evasive, it's not only about Hollywood and about the movie business. I mean, you could set this in Silicon Valley, you could set it in Wall Street, any place where people are desperate, ambitious, greedy, fearful. So you could really set it anywhere and still have it have that same tone and the same ring of truth, you know. So it's not to see it only, you know, as an attack on Hollywood and showbiz, I think is shortchanging the movie.
And this was the press conference for David Cronenberg's Maps of Stars. And this is Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.